It's Kyle Tucker going back to Houston for the first time. He is excited, but he also just kind of always seems muted, and that's okay. If that's who he is, that's who he is. Let's talk about the Cubs and the Astros as they get it on. Tonight, we will have pregame coverage starting at 6:35 on The Score on the Southwest Airlines Radio Network. Sahadev Sharma writes for The Athletic, and he does an incredible job of it. He joins us now on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa app today. Sahadev, thanks so much for joining us. Why don't we start with Kyle Tucker? It's been a half a season, and you had spring training to kind of get to know him. What do you know about Kyle Tucker, and what might it be like for him returning to a place where he won championships?
Yeah, what you said there, he's excited to return. I immediately said, is he? I didn't get that when I talked to him, but I completely agree with you. He's muted. We don't know what his emotions are because he's not one to, like, display them out for everyone to see. He's a very calm individual. I think he is able to compartmentalize. I think this is a strength, and Craig Counsell has expressed that to us. So you're not going to see him scream and yell. If he strikes out, he's not going to freak out. If he hits a home run, he's not going to thump his chest. This is just who he is. He's a very baseline. It is kind of perfect for Craig Counsell because it's how he looks at the game as well. He is who he is. Why act like someone else? And then you see the numbers he puts up, and there's nothing to complain about. So I was looking at something today and realized that Kyle Tucker is on pace for his best season by WAR.
Wow.
I didn't even realize that. That's how it's just like ho-hum he is as a star. I mean, we know he's a star. That's why they acquired him. That's why they paid so much for him. And he just is so – it's so consistent. He has a few bad games, and people are like, what's wrong with Kyle Tucker? And then he goes out and has a three-hit game, hits a home run, and it's like, oh, yeah, he just does that. It's not a big deal. And what I've learned is you barely notice how great he is. You see it in game, right? But then you almost miss how good it is. It's really impressive to just go in day in, day out, have that, you know, same heartbeat and same attitude. And I think it helps everyone else to not be so up and down because it's easy to kind of, you know, ride the roller coaster. I'm sure there were fans freaking out Wednesday morning and nothing, you know, it's the same old Cubs. They're still in first place. They have the same lead they did Monday morning.
Cam Smith has a 744 OPS in 67 games. Isak Paredes has an 820 OPS in 77 games. He's got 16 homers. Hayden Wesneski is having Tommy John surgery and is out for the year. We know what Kyle Tucker is. How does this trade look to you halfway through the season?
Yeah, it's funny. I was thinking about this earlier today as well. How different would the team look if they hadn't have traded for Kyle Tucker? Cam Smith probably isn't up with the Cubs. I'm not sure if they're as aggressive as Houston decided to be with Cam Smith. I'm not sure if Isak Paredes has those same numbers. Does he? I mean, I don't think Wrigley was terrible for him, but outside of Tampa Bay, maybe Houston's the next best ballpark for him. Boston would be a really good ballpark for him. I think Wrigley would have been fine, but with the wind blowing in as much as it has been, would we see those same numbers? I think there's a few ways to look at this. A, you got a superstar that is producing. That's great. B, just another piece of information, another move that shows Jed Hoyer can be aggressive. I think it started last deadline where we saw him make some aggressive moves, and then you saw it again in the winter. And it should give fans who were questioning, will Jed Hoyer make these aggressive moves, these win now moves, to go and get a World Series or make a push in October? I think that gives fans confidence that he will, or should give fans confidence that he will. And, you know, everything that I've heard is they're going to be a very aggressive team this deadline. And I think the Kyle Tucker move kind of gives us a little more confidence that they will be.
Sahadev, now that we have a half a season of play behind us, what do you think the Cubs need?
Yeah, I think the obvious thing is starting pitching. It was screaming out at us after those first two games in St. Louis. If it wasn't screaming out at us all of June, Ben Brown and Colin Ray, they did really good work at times, and then they've had some pretty rough outings. The inconsistency makes it hard to, you know, it's not great when you don't know what you're getting start to start, especially with what Ben Brown is doing. I think Shota Imanaga's return is huge. They need one more starter. They have to get at least one more starter. Bullpen depth, you know, I like this bullpen a lot. They didn't give up a run against St. Louis after a really tough weekend where it would have been easy to hang your head because the wind was blowing out for three games. And if you weren't, you know, if you just look at the box score, you think the bullpen was an issue. It wasn't. A lot of guys that aren't their number one relievers were pitching. And B, the wind was howling out all weekend. That's a really tough day to pitch. I would say ignore those pitching lines from last weekend. And, you know, I think a right-handed hitter may be needed. I still am saying let's just give Justin Turner a little bit more time. It's probably been plenty of time, but you never know with a veteran like that when it turns on. But right-handed hitter, maybe they have a month to go look and figure out what's going on with Matt Shaw and what's out there. And then I think right-handed hitter is something that Jed Hoyer is going to look at.
Yeah, in this series, the Astros have four lefties coming out of that bullpen, man. It's like, and they're all pretty good. So that right-handed hitting is going to get exposed again. Nico Horner's right-handed, just hit his first home run. That was nice. He's been really good. You wrote about him earlier in the week. That's our guy. We talked to him on Tuesdays. But man, he's headed towards another year of four wins above replacement, which would be kind of remarkable for his profile, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's a guy that you don't realize is a four-win player unless you watch him every day. Not flashy, but he's got an edge to him. He's got this hustle to him that the team feeds off of. I really liked listening to Jameson Taillon talk about him and say that, you know, it felt like there was something missing in Japan, and then they got back home and he realized, oh, it's Nico. Nico brings something to the team that you can't quite measure. They see him out there doing everything right, whether it's running the bases, how he approaches things at the plate, his defense, and then all the work he puts in before, after games, in between starts. He's the pro, like whatever the equivalent of a gym rat is in baseball. That's Nico Horner. And he throw out all the cliches, he gets it. and that's Nico Horner. He's been a pleasure to cover all this time. And now that he's on a winning team where he doesn't need to be one of the best players on offense, he doesn't need to be the star on offense, that just puts, you know, that's he's exactly the type of fit for the fifth best player on a really good team. Doesn't need to do too much. Just put the ball in play. If he hits the occasional homer, great. That's gravy. But he doesn't need to be more than what he is. And that's a really valuable player. I don't know. We talk about this a lot, but there is so much value in saving runs on defense. I don't know how many runs he's saved, but it feels like every other series he's making some huge play that's keeping a critical run off the board.
Sahadev, would you try his pizza that he's making at Rinaldi's? It's spicy pepperoni, hot honey, light cheese, made a little crispy, and pineapple. Where are you on the Nico pie?
Well, he had me until the end there. I don't know about that pineapple. And frankly, like, I can't eat all that spice when it's 95 degrees out. That's not. I sweat already when I eat spice. 95 degrees out, I'm gonna be dripping. That generally sounds good. The pineapple. I'm not a pineapple guy. Maybe wow. Say give me the Nico no pineapple.
Okay, it's fair enough. I learned this lesson from the great Terry Bores that if you're gonna go spicy, the ice cream is always a great choice. After okay. Spicy, ah. do you have a fail safe after you do spicy, or do you just say, you know what, I'm going to deal with the consequences?
Yeah, I think it's just deal with the consequences. It's, you know, like I don't have like a regular routine as someone that regularly eats spicy Indian food and grew up eating it, and you had to just you weren't truly Indian unless you ate all the spicy food with my dad and brother. So like, I had no choice. I had to eat the spicy food. There was no out. There was no like, okay, now you get tried this and it cools your tongue down. you had to survive. So it's kind of just like how I grew up. But I my son gives me a little hell now because I struggle with it. It's not, I don't have the tolerance that I used to, and I just drip sweating and he loves to laugh at me. So
yeah. And as we get older, the acid reflux part of it is not fun either.
Yeah. Well, you're an adult. You're an adult. You get to eat whatever you want. Now you get to define. I don't know if you heard Craig Council was on with us the other day. We asked him if he was a tater tots guy and he said no, cause his mom used to force him to eat tater tots when he was 8 years old. These things leave a mark.
Absolutely, you're right.
Yeah,
it's like when I bought my first pair of Jordans. It's like, wait, I don't have to, like, it's my money. I don't have to ask my dad for permission. He'd never buy me Jordans. Uh-huh. I can buy Jordans now.
Yeah.
So have you and Boog like done a mix and match on the Jordans? Like, you guys had a conversation because he's a big Jordan guy too.
Yeah, his collection, dwarfs mine. There's no competition there, and he's also got. I have big feet, but I don't have Boog big feet. He's got like size 15 or 16, something ridiculous like that.
Mm-hmm. What did you make of the way that Pete Crow Armstrong reacted to the mistake over that night and sort of the next couple of days, and the fact that Craig Council, as he told us, and I'm sure told you guys, did not really talk to him about it. Just kind of texted him the next morning and said, are you doing okay? Just double checking. Just kind of letting him be a professional. What'd you make of all that?
Yeah, I thought, if this is a guy that's out there making mistakes regularly or just, can't handle the moment, is really struggling and is overwhelmed by it all, that'd be one thing, right? You'd want the veterans to get that guy, calm him down. You'd want the manager to make sure he's okay. I think firing off a text, just covering your bases and making sure the guy's fine is the perfect response. Don't overreact to it. Don't make it bigger than it needs to be. I think Pete was pretty hard on himself after the game. He was he doesn't like any sort of failure. He's pretty grumpy after any game where unless they win, if he doesn't do well, he's not thrilled with himself. He's hard on himself, but he's also not the type that dwells on it. I don't see him coming in grumpy the next day where you can't talk to him about the moment or anything like that. But his answers were short. He wasn't thrilled, but he was there waiting to speak to us after the game and owned it. He's just not the one that's going to expound on it. There are certain guys that are very reflective with the media. I'm sure he handled it the best as he knows how. And I don't think it needs to be something that is talked about for days on end, because it's just not something that happens regularly. It was a silly mistake that I'm sure no one wanted to happen. And I'd be surprised if this becomes a regular thing with him.
Let's do a threat assessment in the National League Central, because the other three teams in contention have had a good couple of weeks. You saw the Cardinals up close. Who's the biggest threat to the Cubs and why?
Yeah, I don't think the Cardinals have the pitching. They've also been remarkably healthy. I don't think they've had a single injury, whether it's starters or bullpen. I don't think they've had an injury. That's not normal in today's day and age of pitching. I just don't think it's that intimidating. The Brewers have a lot of pitching. The Reds look good and they're getting better. I'm sure you guys saw what Chase Burns did the other day. They have a lot of good young pitching. I wouldn't rule out either of those teams. Right now the Reds seem a little scary. When you have that young talent, that scary young talent that's starting to figure it out. Obviously, Milwaukee has that kid, Mizorowski, who looks nasty. There's just a lot of good young talent in this division right now, and it's if it clicks for these guys, either one of those teams could be pretty scary. Jackson Chourio hasn't really turned it on, as far as I know, and he could figure it out and click any moment like he did late last season. So both those teams, I would watch the Reds and Milwaukee. I don't know which one's going to run, make a run at it, but I don't think the Cubs are running away with this division. I just, there's a lot of talent. We'll see who buys and how they buy. And the Brewers are weird, right? They could be like the Rays in the sense that they do the buy sell thing. So I don't know what they'll look like after the deadline either.
Yeah, they're smart. They're smart. Brandon Woodruff making a rehab start at AAA could be back for Milwaukee within a couple of weeks. But the Reds, I mean, the Francona effect that Lawrence has been afraid of, and the fact that they DFA'd Candelario the other day and called up Chase Burns, and Nick Kroll, the GM, said, this is a statement of intent. It was like, oh, boy, are they finally now going to be aggressive at the deadline? I think they might be. I think you might be onto it, Saadov.
Yeah, I would watch out for that Reds team. I say Milwaukee because I always underestimate them, and then they, you know, prove me wrong year after year. They're just a really well-run organization. But the Reds, talent-wise, I just look at them and I say, ooh, if they get going, they start figuring it out. Weird first half for them. If they start clicking, watch out. There's a lot of talent there. And like you said, Francona, now they have that experienced manager that everyone knows is special that you know they could make some noise. So this is not going to be an easy second half. You have to just appreciate that how well the Cubs have done and taken care of business, really avoided a downstretch. I cannot emphasize how impressive Wednesday and Thursday were after how down it felt. Maybe on the outside, probably not on the inside, but on the outside it seemed like the Cubs were on the precipice of like, ooh, is this their losing streak? Is this where things, you know, where they hit a bad rough patch? And they answered right away. Impressive stuff.
Saadov, as always, man, we'd love to talk with you. And the next time you're on, we're only talking spicy food. That's the only thing that we're going to talk about with you.
And we're totally going to play that for Nico, that you'd order the Nico with no pineapple. Guaranteed. Guaranteed. So good luck. Good luck with that in the clubhouse.
All right. Thanks so much, guys. Take care.